Welcome to the Hump Day Podcast. My name is Dr. Kevin Robinson. It is Wednesday, the 17th of May. Now, today, I have the privilege, and I'm almost saying the word privilege, but I really mean it, okay? I'm interviewing Jens. Now, how I know Jens, now, how long have you been coming to our church, Jens?
I don't know, but
I don't know.
It's been a long time.
It's been a long time.
But it's always been very sporadic.
Yes, and the reason it's sporadic is not like you're anti-dis church, is that you are a musician, correct?
Yes, yes. I'm a musician, which means I'm uniquely predisposed to not go to church regularly.
On a regular basis. Okay, so before we get into your music talent and stuff like that, tell me about your childhood. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Ketchum, Idaho.
Ketchum,
Idaho, which is a small town in the Rocky Mountains.
So you're a country boy.
Yeah.
John Denver.
Yeah. Yeah, you know. Take me home.
Take me home.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, so, I mean, the town isn't really, it's not like a, it's a, it's a, it's a small town.
Right.
It's like 3,500 people, but.
But it's not a hillbilly.
It's a ski resort.
Okay.
So you get a lot of, like, a lot of money coming in and out of there in the form of vacation.
So, you know, I assume you know how to ski, right?
Yeah, yeah. My parents are both ski bums.
Oh, really?
So they fell in love. They taught me how to ski when I was 2.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm amazed watching children snow ski. And you never got injured?
Oh, no, not seriously.
Okay.
I've had several concussions, and I've dislocated my shoulder, I've broken some ribs, and...
All right.
But...
And that was before 4 years old.
Then I hit puberty. Nah, that was just
so anyway.
Well distributed over my...
Okay, over your skiing
yeah.
career. So you grew up there. You have any brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have an older sister, a younger brother.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So you were the middle kid, which we call that the spoiled kid.
I call that the ideal sibling position, really.
Yeah.
It means I'm emotionally independent and well-adjusted.
So did you grow up in the church?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Presbyterian church.
Okay, tell me about that.
That's cool.
Well, that's
it was what it was. You know, I feel like the whole Presbyterian mantle is, like, you know, for me and my family, is pretty arbitrary. I think my parents chose that church not because of any allegiance to Presbyterianism, but just because they like the pastor.
Okay.
You know.
Okay. So you grew up in the Presbyterian church.
Yeah, frozen chosen.
That's what they call them, the frozen chosen?
Yeah, you know, because it's just all very stiff and, you know, we're...
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did you get your passion for music then? Did you get it in the frozen chosen church?
No, definitely not.
Okay.
I have no idea where I got my passion for music. It was, I think, I don't know.
What instrument did you play first?
I started on piano when I was 4.
Okay. So your parents, were they loved music or just wanted you to play music?
My parents like music. My dad in particular is a big music fan.
Okay.
Yeah, I started, so I should back up, I was actually born in Seattle.
Okay.
We moved to Idaho when I was 6.
Okay.
So I started piano lessons when I was 4 and 5, and then when we moved to Idaho, there were no pianos or people to teach me how to play piano, so I stopped.
You stopped.
And then I didn't play any music instruments until I was, I think, about 10 or 11, and so when I got into, well, no, I don't know if it counts, but I started playing the recorder in 4th grade, because
okay.
we had to. Drove people up the wall with that.
Okay.
Drums when I was 10 or 11, really got into it then. That was like when I really, really started to.
Now, were you self taught in drums or did you have a teacher?
The simple answer is yeah, I was self taught. But,
okay.
you know, my dad was kind of a drummer. He drummed in high school. And so
okay.
he taught me some very basic things like this is a double stroke roll, this is a paradiddle.
Okay.
And he was pretty. I think he could tell that I had a, you know, an affinity for it, and so he was pretty good about pushing me to practice a lot. Like I remember when I got my first, so I got a drum when I was 10 or
okay.
11, and just a drum,
one drum, okay.
And I really wanted a drum set. I wanted to play the cymbals
right.
and the bass drum, and you know, I just had a snare drum, and I saved a bunch of money, like from, you know, my grandparents gave me money for Christmas and birthdays.
Okay.
I don't know how else I got money, but I saved a bunch of money and I bought my own drum set.
Right.
And my dad took it away from me.
And did he?
And he's like, well, no, sorry. Back up. He wouldn't let me buy the drum set until I had demonstrated, there's this stick control book, a method on snare drums.
Right.
Control. He wouldn't let me buy a drum set until I had... not mastered, but really nailed these first 5 or 6 pages of this book, so I could demonstrate to him that I could play these passages really well.
Dude, your dad is hardcore.
And then, yeah, well, then I got the drum set, and then he took it all away and just gave me, like, the kick drum, and the snare drum and the hi-hat and said, well, we play this for a while, then get really good at that. And then I had done that, and then a few months later, he gave me another drum. Okay. So I got, and then after that, he gave me a cymbal. And then gradually, the whole thing came back.
Right.
And I had a whole drum set.
In that gradual way, was there a one-day period, three-week period?
I think it was a few months.
Or a few months.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you think about that, that was incredible incentive.
Yeah, for sure.
To practice, isn't it?
Well, yeah. It was also like, we were living in a very small, I was family of five, we were living in a very small house. And I don't think my dad wanted me to be banging on drums, you know, bumping the neighbors. It was a tiny little condo.
Right.
So we were sharing walls with people. And my sister was living in a closet. And my brother and I were sharing a loft. It was tiny. And, you know, he's like, if we're going to have drums in this environment where no one can escape the sound of these drums, like, I want to make sure he's serious about it, because I don't want to, it's going to be torture for everybody. And it probably was. And, you know, man, more power to my parents and to my whole family, my sister, my brother, my brother in particular, who had to share rooms
our
entire childhood, and he had to sit there and he'd put earplugs in, you know, and work on his homework, and I would like play drums.
Oh, wow.
I know, poor guy.
Now, did your brother, your older brother, right?
Younger brother. He looks like my older brother. He's bigger and stronger and hairier and manlier in every way.
So does he have a love for music too, or just you? How about your sister?
My sister was a gifted musician, you would say, in high school and stuff. She played saxophone. She could sing really well, but she didn't really pursue it after that.
Okay.
It wasn't really
so somehow thing. You had this incredible passion
for
music that you haven't stopped.
Mm-hmm.
And so, okay, you grew up in the... I like the term Frozen Chosen.
Yeah.
For some reason, I just like the Frozen Chosen.
Yeah.
So you grew up in this Presbyterian church all your life. Is there a day that you said, you know, I'm going to personally... say, you know what, I'm going to follow Christ, or you just went to the motions of behavior change? And
yeah.
Did you have any deep experience?
No. I can't say. I've never been, like, struck by lightning or had one of those, like,
emotional
epiphanies.
Thing.
No, I haven't really had one of those.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of told my parents that I wanted to be a Christian when I was like 6 or 7. Like, like I had no idea what that meant or what I was getting myself into. Probably for the best.
Cause the thing is, I remember telling like my parents that I want to be a Christian so my parents would like me more.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you accept Christ in your life. Oh, my goodness, it's a reflection of him.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, I'm going to get good standing with my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So in your case, it
no, I don't think. I mean, what does a 6-year-old know about anything?
No, that's true.
So, I was
what does a 54-year-old know? He doesn't know.
Probably
anything.
Less. I mean, yeah.
At least when you're 6 years old, you think you know it all.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I did.
Okay. So you grew up in the church and
thing,
not really a powerful commitment to Christ or
I was definitely committed.
Okay.
But it wasn't because of any emotional epiphany or spiritual awakening. It was like
so you had a pretty positive experience for you.
Yeah, most of it. I mean, there's definitely there are episodes, you know, with different churches and with church elders and things of this nature, for sure. I think anyone who spent enough time in the church has those stories, right? They're inevitable.
That's true.
But I think I was really blessed. I had my parents, I think, were really good godly examples. I think I was really lucky with the pastors in my church, my youth pastor, and some of the other, you know, male mentors that I was really lucky enough to have that had... I mean, no one's perfect, and they have their share of issues
with
the rest of us. But no, I think they did a really good job of imparting to me some stuff that I felt that was really important for me developing as a Christian. And, you know, some of the stuff that I learned I've since doubled down on. Some of the stuff I've learned I've since rejected. You know, that's just kind of part of...
Oh, it's interesting. And growing up in the church that you said, I've doubled down or I rejected... what are some areas in your walk thing that you just got, this is baloney? And I mean baloney. I don't mean the other word. I mean, did you really struggle? I mean, for me, it was hypocrisy.
Mm-hmm.
I did. It would drive me crazy.
Well, that was a... Yes, for sure. And I think I went through a stage like all kids do when you're in your teens, later teens.
Right.
When you realize your parents and your pastors are not... angels, and they're not infallible. And you realize they're human beings, and they have their share of issues, and they messed up, and they've messed up with you, and then, like, learning to... First, you're, like, really kind of pissed about that, and then you learn to accept it, and you learn to love them again. And I've done that with my share of people.
Okay.
Pastors and parents included.
You know, it's interesting how we focus on people letting us down, but we seldom realize...
That we can, let down?
We let people down.
Oh, wow. Speak for yourself.
I am speaking for myself. I'm the pastor that lets people down. You know, that it's gone to that. So when you work, now you're out of high school, and I'm assuming you're getting pretty good at the instruments you're playing. You're focusing more on drums now, right?
No. I mean, I out of high school, I was, I went to college.
Okay.
Twice, I got 2 degrees in jazz drum set performance, so that was my...
So where did you get there's a degree called jazz drum set?
Yeah, I went to the Berklee School of Music for my bachelor's.
Berklee?
Yeah, not UC Berklee.
Okay.
Everyone gets that one confused. No, where in Boston.
In Boston.
Yeah.
And it's a music school.
Yeah, it's there.
Okay, so you got 2 degrees.
I got my bachelor's there, and I got my master's degree at... in the valley here at APU.
Okay. So now did it take you where you get to the point where you're going, I'm good at this. I'm making a full commitment to this.
I did that when I was probably like 16.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like you said, hey, when I grow up, I want to be a doctor or a policeman or a fireman.
Yeah. It goes back to the caveat of being, well, I was kind of self-taught, but I wasn't because I had my middle school and high school band director, who was the same dude, was also a drummer. I never took private lessons with him, but what he did do is he was like a gigging drummer around town, and there was like a hotel, you know, a touristy kind of ski lodge, and it had a lounge in it, and he was the drummer in this band, this jazz trio.
Okay.
And he started subbing me the gig when I was probably 15, and so I'd go in there and I'd play jazz with these guys starting when I was 15.
Wow.
I did that up until I moved to LA, so from 15 to 22.
So at 15 years old, do you think they believed in you? Like, they go, man, Jens has he's gifted.
What?
Or are they just totally entertaining you?
Oh, he wouldn't have thrown me the gig just to entertain me.
All right.
He definitely thought it was an experience that wasn't going to be wasted on me. I don't know if that means that he thought I was going to grow up to be a professional musician, a professional drummer. But he just needed the nights off to be with him. And there wasn't any other drummer in town, so yeah, I'll do it.
Okay. So I'm 15 through, you said 2018 or 21?
20. I moved to LA when I was 22.
22 years old. How old are you now?
I'm a ripe old. I just turned 34, actually.
34 years old. You are old.
Ancient.
34 years old.
Ancient.
Okay. So therefore, when do you get to the point where you're saying that you realize I'm professional at this? That is it based on the gigs or the self confidence, or or just the drive that you have?
When did I realize I was a professional?
Or did you? Or are you? Haven't realized.
I don't know. I remember when the very first night I subbed for my teacher on that gig, he showed up to school for me the next day, and he had a dollar bill.
Right.
And he's like, keep this, because this is, and I still have this dollar this day. He's like, this is the first dollar you ever made as a professional musician.
Oh, okay.
And I still have it. Yeah, my mom framed it for me. And then I was like, wow, I'm a professional musician.
Right.
That's pretty cool. And I was making way more money than my friends were making. I was making $100 a night, you know, playing at this little lounge, and I was getting old women that were like hitting on me and giving me their hotel room keys and their phone numbers and stuff.
Oh, really?
And I was like, I'm going to do this the rest of my life. It's going to be great.
Now, you didn't see this in this podcast, but he was rolling his eyes when he was saying this. So, okay.
Those are all true stories.
I assume they are. I assume they are. So then, okay, after college, then when did you discover that you have this incredible writing ability?
What, to write music?
Yeah, to write music.
I didn't have an incredible ability to write music. Discover that.
Oh, you did?
I wanted to write music.
Okay.
And I started writing music.
Do you remember the first song you wrote?
Yeah.
What was the title?
The first song I ever wrote?
Yeah, that you go,
It was really. I remember it was for really. Well, I was in bands in high school. Okay. You know, like punk rock bands. In addition to the.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I played a lot of punk.
I guess that would be typical.
Yeah, and so I kind of contributed to the composition of those songs. Okay. But the first time I put a pen to paper and wrote a song, I was in high school and I wrote this really awful song called All Jay's Blues. It was a blues, and it was just it was just a bass riff. It was really dumb. The first song I ever wrote with like lyrics, where I wrote lyrics that were meaningful for me, I wrote when I was probably 22 or 23, which I think is late in the game for aspiring songwriters. It was when I first moved here. And then I remember it's a really bad song. I probably wrote probably...
Are there any songs that you wrote that you think that are excellent?
Yeah.
Or do you think... Because, you know, every time I put a sermon together, I go, oh, that sucked.
I think that too. Yeah. I probably, it's fair to say I probably wrote 50 or 60 songs before I wrote a good one, okay. though, for sure. I'm sure your first 50 or 60 sermons.
Jeez. You know, the only, and I think we talked about this before we turned the mic on, about our mother. You know, my mom, I knew I did a horrible sermon. And she was going, oh, man, the Holy Spirit led you on that one. And I'm thinking, oh, only a mother. Only a mother. Just because I know I bombed, Mom, but I love you too, you know? Just on and on. But you know what? She was speaking her truth. I mean, she had such a love for me that she was just amazed that her son's preaching.
Well, God bless her.
Okay, so... The thing is, now, if I'm kind of following your life here, when did you begin to get, and I'm leading a question, very sarcastic when it came to the church? What developed? Because you have a sarcastic and an honest thing about the church. Mm-hmm. And the thing is, it doesn't develop through head knowledge. It develops through experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm kind of curious... that you had this positive experience in church, semi-positive. You had the maturity to know that your pastor is not perfect, like your parents are not perfect, and deal with it. But somehow, I don't know the word, cynicism? Is that a word?
Cynicism. Skepticism.
Yeah, skepticism. Anything with an ism that you have towards the church. How did that develop?
Where did that develop? Well, I would say my... The earliest I can remember being skeptical. I mean, I would think I have a sarcastic sense of humor in general, and I feel like I'm skeptical towards human beings in general.
Okay.
Like, I generally...
Don't like people?
Generally don't like people. Generally, certainly don't generally trust people that I don't know.
Okay.
And, you know, absolutely. And
it's like their intention. You don't trust their intention?
Yeah, I don't trust anything about them, really. Okay. I mean, that trust can develop quickly.
Right.
But someone I don't know, never met, never talked to. Okay. And I don't really have any desire to meet people I don't know either, which is probably why it took you and me so long to connect. But... I'm not suggesting I'm proud of that or that that's healthy.
No, that's actually true, because you were coming to the church for years.
Mm-hmm.
Before.
It's not like let's clarify. I was coming like every other month.
Every other month to play.
To play. Yeah.
And so there eventually you and I did connect.
Yeah.
But it was years
despite
late.
Despite my best efforts.
And what's interesting too is almost like what your experience were as a pastor and with other pastors that you look to me as a pastor.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost to a point where you're going to mess me up too, or you're going to disappoint me too. So I'm just going to lower my expectations way down.
Yeah.
Right? Is that true?
No, I won't say I've lowered my expectations.
Okay.
I think that this church for me came along and just, you know, at more or less the right time where I moved to LA, and I had been really lucky in the church I grew up in, and I was really lucky when I was going to college in Boston. I found a church I really liked, and when I moved out to LA, I searched for years trying to find a church. And this is I mean, that's like that's the Protestant burden. We can kind of like, this church is cool, but they don't allow this. Or like that church, and this church is good, but the pastors kind of give me a creepy vibe. Like that church, you know. So we can kind of like we can pick or choose our church, which is like something I've always admired about Catholics, where they're like, this is the church, warts and all. I love it. I'm committed to it. I'm gonna do my best.
Yeah, every Sunday, no matter what.
Yeah, and Protestants are like, I don't really like the way this pastor, you know, he's you can find some petty gripe about anything and then start your own Protestant
denomination. Actually, that's a good point. Because it's based on how I feel.
Yeah, yeah. So when I say I was searching for churches, it's very possible that I passed up some really quality churches that I was too vain or too selfish or too ignorant to realize. But anyway, I think the reason I stayed here was basically because... I believe very firmly that the pastor sets the tone of the church, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Their demeanor, their attitude, their faith it sets the tone, and it attracts people for good and for bad reasons, you know, to the church. And I think one of the reasons I was drawn to you was that you don't hold any pretense of, like, I've got this all figured out. And I think that's an issue I don't like with a lot of Protestant churches, is that you have the pastor, this good-looking guy with his beautiful wife and his well-behaved kids, and they kind of this ideal that not only, like, he's kind of putting himself out there as, like, you know, follow Jesus, you need to be just like me.
Right.
I think that... congregations want to see that. They want something like, it's so much simpler to say, do A, B, and C. You could be just like this guy. This guy's got it all figured out. You know, it's like, you know, kind of like a golden calf of sorts.
It's like prosperity thinking.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. And you, the blessing of your tremor is that you cannot do that. It's impossible for you to put like, look at me. I'm so slick. You know, you cannot.
I'm so slick. Watch me hold the Bible. Oh, the Bible just fell.
And I think because of that, you're not, you don't come off in the least bit as like you're like selling anything to anyone. I was willing to sit there and listen to what you had to say.
Oh, wow.
And I think there are a lot of people who, by no fault of their own, I'm like, I don't like that guy.
Yeah.
I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And like you, I was willing to listen to. I absolutely was willing to listen to what you had to say. And that's not to say I agree with everything you say, but I trust that
where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the thing is, I get the opposite too. I get people that come in this church wanting the perfect pastor and the perfect wife and the kids and all that stuff. And I even had someone leave the church because I even said that I struggled with my faith.
Yeah.
And I was so frustrated because I'm going, if I didn't struggle with my faith, it would not be faith.
Yeah, right.
Because in order to have faith, you have to have doubt.
Yeah.
Because if I don't have doubt, then I have certainty. Mm-hmm. We're not told to live. It's frustrating. It's frustrating. And so the thing is, now, when it comes to worship music, and I love...
I regret to inform you I have to leave because I have to play a gig, but
I know,
because this discussion, the worship music discussion, could go hours.
Well, we're not going to go for hours. We'll stay within a 5 minute period.
Okay, I got 5 minutes.
Okay,
7 minutes.
So we look at this and we'll say that when it comes to worship, because you were telling me a while back that sometimes playing worship songs drives you nuts.
Yeah.
And so,
well, listening to them more than playing them.
Oh, really?
But, yeah.
Well, now, tell me briefly why it drives you nuts, and what is true worship to you? Tell me briefly in 2 minutes.
I can give you...
Okay, why does worship drive you nuts?
Because I find the music vacuous on all levels, just like...
Vacuous. Like an empty vacuum.
Like, devoid of any true creativity, any inspiration, any genuine... well-meaning theology, just like empty, and banal, absolutely, just like ugh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you.
It's like nails on a chalkboard.
Really?
Yeah.
And the thing is, what is the worst worship song? You're going, you've got to be.
They're all the same. Oh, there's really? Not one that's gonna be like that's the. They're all bad. Yeah, that's. As I realize that I've allowed for no exception, like there have been no good worship songs ever written. I'm sure there've been great worship songs. I mean, here's the thing. This is my subjective experience about about a form, an art form. And I play worship music in church, you know, to help other people out because I feel, or you know, I feel like. For me, it's not an act of worship at all.
Okay.
I feel like it is an act of service because I realize that those songs and the emotion that those songs elicit in people and I would argue sometimes manipulate out of them.
Okay.
I feel like for some people that is, or for everyone, the emotional aspect of your faith is an important aspect of your faith.
And the emotional aspect of your faith.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Because we all, I mean, the decision to follow Christ is not an intellectual one. It's an emotional one, okay. I think, if we're honest with ourselves.
Yeah. And I can get that.
And you like to quote Richard Rohr, right? Right. He's the guy who said God cannot be known, he can only be loved, right? And I think there's a lot of truth in that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that the emotion that people feel during some of those songs is how they feel like they're loving God or whatever.
Okay.
And I feel like it can be, if I can help them do that, if I can help them in their moment of worship, that's fine, but...
But okay, let's close in this. Because it's almost like, if I can help... Because you're on a time schedule, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at the time schedule. So, for you, you're saying, if I can help people in their way of worshiping,
mm-hmm.
then good, I can do this. But for me, it ain't cutting it, right?
Yeah, it's...
It doesn't
work. Certainly not... It's not worship for me.
Okay.
I don't feel worshipful when I do it.
Okay. So it would be interesting to me. Let's say somebody else is listening to the podcast and goes, I get it. Some of these worship songs are lame. Mm-hmm. I don't get anything. Could we have half the congregation that sits there and just stands there?
Yeah. Sometimes? I mean, I could rail on this for hours. Just like, because I've been up there in enough churches and enough bands looking out over the congregation. I can see that the amount of people who are actually engaged in it, like are into this music, you know, it's probably like 10% of the people out there. Everyone else is just like, this is how church goes. So I have to endure the first half an hour of worship music. And you know, that's why everyone shows up late. They trickle in for 10, 15 minutes.
Right.
Like, oh, the music. They're still going. Most people. It's not like they don't like it. They don't know what to do with it. It makes them feel uncomfortable. It makes them feel awkward.
So for you, okay, what is true worship?
I mean, the platitude is worship is a lifestyle, right?
Okay.
Yeah, but that's true. I feel like for me, worship is. It's a much more introverted thing. It's very introverted. It's not, I don't feel comfortable. I don't feel any desire to express that in a public way. Like jump for joy, sing out loud. That's absolutely
like a show off.
No, not at all. And it's not to say that everyone who does that is showing off.
Because
I think there are people who are genuinely like, I can't contain the joy. That's not me. I can contain my joy.
It's contained.
The joy.
It's contained.
Yeah.
Okay. So, on going on this, let me just, I keep saying, let me close on this. but the thing is, what's interesting is when you grow spiritually for you, and it's a deep saying that it's a lifestyle for you, the worship.
Yeah.
Rather than I go to service to worship.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That's basically what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's amazing to me, a lot of people that go to our church do not know this about you, and I kind of announced
it's like, it goes back to my, you know, my own kind of pathological state of being, and that I avoid getting to know people, so that's the reason why a lot of people in church probably don't know anything.
Yeah, they don't know anything about you.
Yeah, I'm happy about that.
Yeah, in fact, I even asked them, because I announced and I showed a picture of you in concert, that it was your...
It was like a flyer.
It's a flyer that was passed out in London when you were in concert.
Yeah.
And then I go, did anyone talk to you? And you go, no. But I'm thinking, did you want to talk to anybody?
No, I don't. I don't. And I'm not suggesting that's healthy.
Everyone gets a vibe.
That's my own neuroses. That's why I have like this kind of stupid haircut. You know, I have holes in my clothes because I want to look mean so people don't approach me. That's it.
So, but that's you. That's, I mean, it's your personality. So when you're in concert like this, and... Do you feel like you've made it now?
No.
To a point?
Oh, well, I mean, I think what happened is that my definition of that, making it, totally changed.
Okay.
You know, it's like the point where I'm like, at the point in my life where I decided this is going to be what I'm going to do for the rest of my life, regardless of success or notoriety, you know, money, that was when I made it, really. Because all I do is write and perform and record, produce music. That's all I do. And that's great. That makes me, I'm so lucky. Well, lucky is the wrong word, but I am blessed. And that I've been able to structure my life in such a way that that is what I got to spend all my time doing. So I have made it in that regard. I haven't made it in that I'm broke as a joke and no one knows or cares about my music. But
broke as a joke.
Broke as a joke.
Yeah. So the thing is, how does anyone, if someone's listening to the podcast, listen to your music?
They can just search my name, Jens Karas, on YouTube, Spotify, YouTube,
okay.
iTunes, iMusic, it's all
it's all there. They, they can listen to it. So.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for I know we tried doing this podcast last year, and then you're in and out.
We had the best discussion. It was so
good. We were talking about that. We had a deep, deep discussion, but we don't know what we talked about because the sound was bad.
Well, we should have another discussion because I generally think that like my quote unquote testimony and the history of my life and how I came to play music and be in the church is fairly uninteresting.
Okay.
It's just like, eh. And I'm this middle-class white kid from Idaho, and I like music, and so I play it. And here I am. And I grew up in the church, and it was okay. So there's nothing remarkable there.
But you know what? It's your life.
Yeah,
And my life is not remarkable either, but it's my life. Uh-huh. And that's what these
Yeah, but I don't presuppose anyone wants to hear about my life. Why would anyone care about where I came from and what I do and how I got... It's like...
I do. I totally care, because I love you as a brother.
I know.
If I had a son, it would be just like you.
But we should do this again, and we should get back into like the meat and potatoes about worship.
We will do a second one.
Okay, cool.
And so, anyway, thanks for listening to the podcast, and join us for next week. Remember, every day is a gift from God, and on Sundays our services are 10:00. You're not going to see Jens this Sunday. When are you playing next?
I don't know. I think next month.
You'll see Jen
or Brooke.
Jen next month, and if you want, ask Brooke or Angela. God bless you, and I'll talk to you. I'll see you guys next week. God bless.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
He said, "Don't come up and talk to me."
Don't come on.
Talk to me. But give me an ugly stare.
Don't come up and talk to me.